From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall from our studios in La Crosse. Coming up later on Newsmakers, this weekend is the 29th annual La Crosse River Cleanup. We'll find out what's going on with that and how you can take part. But first, as many unsheltered residents in La Crosse prepare to spend the warmer months of the year in the safety of a city park, officials are looking at new ways to address the needs of the homeless here in our community. Joining us are La Crosse Mayor Mitch Reynolds. Mr. Mayor, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
We've got Brian Sampson, who is the Homeless Services Coordinator for the City of La Crosse. Brian, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And we have Tim Acklin, who's a Planning Administrator for the City of La Crosse. Tim, thanks for being here. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us.
So first things first, I'm interested to know, with bringing Brian on board as the Homeless Services Coordinator, which is a pretty new position with the city, I'm wondering, Mr. Mayor, how the city's role has changed over the last year or so when it comes to efforts to provide for the unsheltered in our community.
Well, I kind of look at it as driving the bus a little bit, and that was kind of the goal when I decided that we needed to add a Homeless Services Coordinator. It was with the intention of adding someone to the staff who could coordinate all the services that we have, you know, multiple agencies, obviously, in this community that are involved in providing services for people in need in various kinds, and certainly in terms of homelessness and housing and all of that. But there is not a ton of coordination, or never really has been a ton of coordination among all of those service agencies. So really bringing on Brian on board, the idea was let's make sure that the city is at the helm and really directing traffic here. I have got so many metaphors that I've tossed in there, but you get the idea. And it's really just making sure that everyone, all of these service agencies, are at the table. We're coordinating response. We're collaborating. We're cooperating in how we even discuss homelessness at all, and developing strategies together.
Brian, now that you're fully on board, you've been in the job a little while, and have had a chance to evaluate things. What are your priorities as the Homeless Services Coordinator?
I think building off of what the mayor had said, as far as coordinating a strategy or an approach for our entire community to help people who are experiencing homelessness, identifying what our community does really well, how can we do more of that, and where are the gaps as well, and how can we fill those gaps with all resources from our community. So that's really been the focus, is trying to get a better hold as a community really about what that issue looks like and what we are currently doing well.
Speaking of what is currently going on, the weather is warming up, and there's been reporting from both the televisions in town and the Tribune over some people moving back into the park, and that's going to be more and more people as the winter subsides and spring sets in. How is that situation compared to last year? I think last year, Mr. Mayor, when we talked, there were 100 or so people over there. It looks like maybe more this summer.
Boy, hard to tell at this point. I don't know what our numbers are right away. I mean, we really established a number of campsites really just over the weekend, and I'm not entirely sure what the complete numbers are. I think Brian would have a better sense of that than I do. But I mean, the most significant change for Huska Park is establishing it as an actual campground. So there is a different process and a different, there are different regulations related to that. We have to provide other amenities as a campground space.
And you're also changing, correct me if I'm wrong, but the article that I read in the Tribune said that you were having like a sign up process for the people who go there, so that you know that you know who's coming and going, and I'm wondering whether that will also make it easier to help direct people toward other kinds of social services that they might require.
Yeah, and Brian can address all of that. I mean, it really is. It goes back to that collaborative effort and how that's all going. But Brian, you can speak to that if you'd like.
Yeah, Brian, how are some of these changing policies going to make care for our unsheltered community more efficient?
Yeah, so the service agencies in our community have really taken the lead as far as that registration process and helping people get registered, collecting important information. And what that'll help do is, number one, it'll help help us know where people are. So if housing opportunities arise and if they come about, then those service agencies know exactly where people are and how to help get them into those different housing opportunities. And then also it helps those agencies get people housing ready and help connect them with other services or other wants or needs that they may have. And so it's that coordinated approach of where are people, how can we continue to help them? Because people are at Husker right now, and our goal is to get people off of the streets and into housing. And so by having that registration system and by knowing some of those things, it can help speed along the process, hopefully, in getting people both housing ready and identifying housing resources.
Looking ahead to maybe the rest of this summer, maybe next year, I mean, is there a benchmark as far as how quickly you would like to see each case turned around, or is there a benchmark in terms of how many people you want to get through various services in order to get them into more permanent, more stable housing? What does success look like?
Tomorrow, I'd like to get them all into housing.
Right.
Tomorrow.
Yes.
That would be ultimately the most successful way to go about this.
Tomorrow seems fast and potentially unreasonable. Is there a benchmark in terms of what you actually expect to occur?
Yeah, so I think part of it is we didn't get here overnight, right? It wasn't like yesterday there were two individuals experiencing homelessness and today there's X many. So I think that's part of what makes answering that question difficult is it took mm-hmm. us a long time to get here. And number two, we're talking about a complex system that's not just one answer. We're not just talking about people stop using drugs or people get healthier or whatever those other negative stigmas are. The problem is complex. That is really from, you know, people that we're working with to affordable housing to just bigger areas like that. And so we're working as hard as we can to get people into housing, but the issues and the problems are complex and they're all across the country as well. And so we're trying to identify what those issues are and then identify solutions.
The city has tried a couple of different ways to find transitional housing. I know there was a hotel purchase that fell through pretty recently, and another opportunity that fell through with the old Chamber of Commerce building. But I'm wondering, are you like continuing to look for something that the city could either purchase or build to turn into transitional housing? Or are you starting to look at options other than that?
Right now, Ezra, the county is looking at developing a transitional housing space. And so we're following the lead on the county from with the county on that. So they're taking the lead on that aspect of this. And again, we're the role of the city and all this is trying to coordinate all of these different resources together. And really, I mean, you bring up housing, and that's one of the most important aspects of what we're doing as a city, is that, you know, we really have a just a intense shortage of housing within the city. Housing of all kinds. I know we talk about affordable housing all the time, but really just housing of all kinds. And we have what would normally be in a normal market, we have housing that would be affordable, but it is the prices are inflated so much that it's just not accessible to a lot of people, and so it's really tough to find places for people to live. And that's what we're one of the key things that we're working on as a city is just adding housing to the city, and that's through a number of different development projects, through an affordable housing project on the south side at 4th and Jackson, as well as a bunch of other market rate housing. And this is really this market solution to some of this housing crisis, is that if we add housing, add supply essentially to the city of La Crosse, we can hit that demand curve a little bit, such that we can help decrease the inflated levels of rent that are being charged for some places that frankly just aren't worth it. So we're really pushing hard on that as a city. In fact, one of the things that Tim is engaged in Tim's whole department, in the planning department, is working on these development projects that will add substantial hundreds and hundreds of homes to the city of La Crosse over the next, 10 years.
Tim Acklin is the planning administrator for the city of La Crosse and is with us here. What about what the mayor was just talking about, just adding to the housing inventory and how much that could help alleviate the issue with so many unsheltered people?
The addition of housing to our city is really sort of incorporated into all of our conversations we have with potential developers. So when we look at a lot of our vacant underutilized sites, these big box stores that have, where the businesses have left, like Shopko and Kmart. When talking with developers about what we would like to see, we always constantly talk about housing. And we talk about the availability of different types of housing, quality, affordable, workforce type housing. And so we just try to make the highest and best use. So when we talk about these Shopko sites, is there a way to remove the existing building for something new that's multiple stories rather than one story? Or maybe there is still retail on the bottom, but there's three or four or five floors of residential up above that. That was a conversation we had with the former Kmart site, where it's what can we do to improve upon a large, big box, empty store, and what can we do to make it highest and best use? River Point District is another example of that, where for years, we had acquired all of that land, we had it cleaned up, and then we were taking it out of the floodplain, and now we're having conversations about housing. When we did a market study, housing was the primary use of what's going to happen there and the most desirable. And so along with other uses as well. So we really try to make sure that whatever conversations that we have as a department of developers, that we're increasing the amount of housing. And we're looking to have that type of housing that for all ranges of income, and all types of housing, whether it's workforce, whether it's affordable, market rate, whatever it is.
The type of housing becomes an important part because a lot of the people who can't afford to get into entry-level housing situations are looking at what's up on the market right now, and often it's three or four bedrooms, 2,000, 2,500, even 3,000 square feet, and they just can't afford that kind of thing. They need something smaller, but then a developer might not be able to, they might not think they are able to make enough money if they're building something that is one or two bedrooms and 8 to 1,100 square feet or something like that. What can the city do to encourage development of things that do provide housing options for those lower end income people?
What drives those higher rents is the market. It is building codes. It is cost of materials. There are some things that are out of our hands that drive those prices up that high, because a developer at the end of the day needs to be able to, obviously collect enough rents and leases to pay off the debt that cost them to make that, that development. And so we do have a variety of different things we help. We tend to try to help with out of the box thinking on development. What can we do? Is there different architectural styles? Is there different development materials that they can use to help lower the costs? Is there financial assistance programs that we have as a city that can help offset those costs? Is there other statewide or federal grant programs that we can assist developers in applying for, making them aware of, that can help with potential tax credits or low-income tax credits or something along those lines to help them also reduce the costs? And in some cases with historic buildings that are on the state national register, we can also help direct them towards this historic tax credit process as well to help offset some of those costs to provide incentives to do so.
Looking at some of the options for the unsheltered that the city's been engaged in the last couple of years, as well as options that you're looking for the future that haven't quite worked out yet, like some of that transitional housing, like the recent purchases that have fallen through. Mayor Reynolds, are you encountering a not in my backyard resistance, where people are fine theoretically with some of the options, they just don't want it in their neighborhood, or how can you overcome things like that?
Well, again, I mean, I think, with the county is taking the lead on the transitional housing model. And so the anticipation is that we will be assisting them in identifying a space that is workable. The key for this population is making sure that there is easy access to services and public transportation. Generally speaking, it's in a concentrated area where those services are. In the case of the city of La Crosse, it's in the downtown area where the county building is. or the county buildings are. So we have to keep all that in consideration. And there's invariably, there's going to be folks that for whatever reason would prefer that that there not be a managed shelter space or a managed transitional space next to them. So that's going to be something that's going to happen no matter where.
Last time you were here, you talked about the expense related to providing these services and weighing that against the moral obligation that we as a community take care of one another. And you said that not caring for people is, I don't remember the exact quote, but so correct me if this sounds uncharacteristic, but basically it not caring for people was not something that you were really willing to explore. And so I'm wondering though, as you've had an opportunity to hear from more people and look at some of the solutions that are potentially being entered into over the long term, and as those expenses kind of start to add up, like how much should people expect this to just be a permanent part of the city's budget? I know a lot of the current stuff is being funded through recovery funding, but that isn't going to be around forever. How does the city look at paying for some of this stuff as time goes on?
Right. And I mean, you know, the answer in the long term is really getting the agencies within our community to work together to help to solve this problem together. Identifying a strategy cooperatively that leads us to a point where we're at functional zero for homelessness. And our investment and the investment that I've committed the city to is making sure we have, we're driving the bus with our homeless services coordinator who is engaged constantly with all of these service agencies. So my expectation is that is going to be a need that we have in our community over the long haul. We have a lot of resources being put towards this issue. One of the things that has been lacking is coordinating the delivery of those resources and having a common strategy for how to reach a good outcome for homelessness, you know. And I talk about functional zero. That's my outcome. That's my preferred outcome. It doesn't mean that that's the same for all of our agencies. So we have to come to some consensus on what is that goal for homelessness in our community. And we'll continue to work on that. And to your question, it'll be for the long haul. This is something that will take some time.
You talked about bringing all of the parties to, you know, kind of to a shared agreement on what a plan looks like, a shared strategy. Do you see a time in the future, Brian, where like a strategic plan is perhaps even released to the public?
So one thing that we're doing is coordinating with those existing agencies and services that are out there. So in our area, there's the Cooley Collaborative to End Homelessness. And a couple of years ago, they created a strategic plan or a roadmap, if you will, to get to functional zero for homelessness. And so I'm part of a small team that's been working on not redoing, but kind of revamping and revitalizing that and making sure that's updated so we can present that to the entire collaborative again. So yeah, something like that. I think that's a good example of the partnership of everybody has a role to play. The city, we have our role, not one agency or one business can solve it on their own. And so really just trying to coordinate and collaborate with all of these existing services and then figure out what else we need in our community.
Brian, one more question about the unsheltered community right now, as we're getting again into the warmer months and people in the community are looking for how they can be part of the solution. Are there either organizations they should be looking at to ask about donations, that kind of thing, or are there opportunities to volunteer for different projects that might serve the homeless population?
So if people want to make donations of items, they can drop off those donations at the Reach Center in La Crosse on Fridays. And if they have questions about what exactly the items are that we're looking for, because it's not just anything and everything, there are specific items, they can call the Reach Center to get that updated list as time goes on. There's also going to be like a I forget what it, like a sign up poll basically, or calendar, where if people want to prepare meals and bring meals down to Huska Park, then that's a coordinated way for our community to know, all right, Wednesday night's already covered, but if my group or team want to do Thursday night, we can sign up and do that. So that'll be posted and being blasted out everywhere as well. And so I think there are just a couple of unique ways like that, that if people want to help, those are a couple of ways people can reach out and know how to do that. And I think a good example of our community collaborating as well in order to get all of our resources the furthest.
And that's the Reach Center, which is located where?
It's on 11th Street.
Okay. So that's the Reach Center on the 200 block of 11th Street.
Yeah. Between King and Cass.
That would be specific to donations for people staying at Huska Park and on Fridays. And they want you to call ahead if you have questions about what they are looking for specifically.
Perfect. Well, we have been talking a little bit about how the city is working toward finding solutions on behalf of La Crosse's unsheltered residents. And our conversation will continue with some talk about the city's own strategic planning as the future goes on. Brian Sampson is the Homeless Services Coordinator for the City of La Crosse. Brian, I think we're keeping the mayor and Tim until the next segment, but I think we're saying goodbye to you at this point. So thank you very much for being here. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you again for having me.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Of course, we always want to hear from you. You can reach out to us throughout the week at newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall from our La Crosse Bureau. Some 20 years ago, La Crosse adopted a strategic plan called Confluence. The plan addressed items like neighborhood revitalization, protection of natural resources, improving transportation design, and much more. Now the city says it's time for an update. That brings us to Forward La Crosse, and joining us to talk about that effort, staying with us rather, to talk about that effort, are Mayor Mitch Reynolds and Tim Ackland, the planning administrator for the City of La Crosse. Let me start with you, Tim. What stakeholders are coming together in this Forward La Crosse planning process?
Well, our hope is everyone. Our goal is to have everybody in the City of La Crosse provide input, and even some people outside the City of La Crosse. So I think the challenge really is more of getting them all into some sort of fashion or meeting with them on their terms or holding the appropriate stakeholder or focus group listening sessions or reaching them through social media platforms in some manner to find the best way that people will respond and make their voice heard. Not everybody's up for town hall meetings. Not everybody's up for Zoom or virtual meetings. Not everybody's up for social media participation. So everybody has their own ways to interact. And I think we as a department here have learned in our last planning projects that just holding town hall meetings isn't as effective in hearing the voice of the citizen. So our goal really with this particular effort as well, as this is a plan that is supposed to be the plan for the citizens on how their elected officials should guide our city over the next 10, 15, 20 years, our goal really is to hear from all of them in any way possible. And so when we walk away from this, my personal goal is to be able to say, if somebody didn't participate, it was because they chose not to, not because they weren't aware of it. So trying very hard to do that.
And so there are going to be multiple opportunities for people to participate. And you talked about not all of them being town hall meetings. What are the different sorts of opportunities that people will have to interact with this planning process?
As I said, you know, we have learned from our past efforts that we really haven't been effective at reaching everybody. And so particularly hearing from a lot of our historically underrepresented populations, like our Hmong and Ho-Chunk and Black population, Hispanic. And so we really want to make sure we hear from them. LGBTQ was another one that we had identified. We haven't really heard from those populations in our past planning efforts. So we're trying to have an effort to reach out to them. And so that could mean going to their community centers or their meetings that they hold and hearing from them in that way and sort of working with neighborhood leaders and helping us organize how to come to, like I said, their sort of turf, which, and for instance, that could mean going to like Friends of the Marsh and going to their board meetings and soliciting input. And it could be multiple meetings, or inviting other groups of similar, you know, similar interests to theirs to hold meetings that way, rather than trying to hold some listening session in City Hall. But it could be also opportunities online for town hall, you know, again, focus groups, virtual meetings. What we learned was not everybody is able to in the evenings, again, attend meetings because they have a lot of extracurricular activities with family, kids, those sorts of things. And if it means that they can attend, and we kind of learned this through COVID when we were all doing virtual meetings, it's like my impression or what I saw was participation in these meetings shot through the roof because people could do it from the comfort of their own home. They could have their kid next to them helping them with their homework and then listen in on a neighborhood association meeting or something along those lines. And so we really kind of learned there's just so many other opportunities out there to get people involved. And so we will be advertising those. We're developing those strategies now with our consultants on the best ways to do that with specific organizations and community groups and even individuals on what the best way to do that is. And we will be posting all those on our website, which is forwardlacrosse.org.
Speaking of forwardlacrosse.org, I saw there either is or there's going to be, just if people are not able to participate in any other way, there's a survey there, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah, so right now, and this again, we're just kicking this off. We really just started this within the last few weeks. There's a survey that we want people to go online and take to provide feedback. There is an interactive mapping program where people can, there's a different categories like housing, recreation, land use, things of that nature that people can drag little stickies onto the map of the City of La Crosse and leave comments. People then can view comments that other people left. And then what also happens, and we've seen this already, is that it also allows for people to have a discussion about it. So one person can make a comment, another person can add to it, you know, and say, hey, what about this? And just also elicits that discussion. So that's a pretty interesting tool that people can utilize. We do have a budget game for people to allocate funding to particular areas of the city of what they like to see done. And then there's also sort of another voting game for and leaving input on sort of the overriding guiding principles of the comp plan. This is just the beginning input. So even though we have one survey now, we anticipate over the course of the next year and a half, as this process keeps moving along, is there'll be many more opportunities, pieces of information, and other mapping and things like that for the community to respond to. So even though you come on now and answer all these questions, there's going to be much more to be able to interact with and respond to throughout the course of the process.
A comprehensive plan like this covers so many areas, Mayor Reynolds, and I'm wondering without telling but anybody else, you know, leaving it open to the public for whatever input they're going to provide. You as both the mayor and as a longtime resident here, what are areas of your concern?
You know, my biggest concern is to engage people as much as possible in providing input to help us form this comprehensive plan. This is not, you know, this is not my plan. This is the plan for the community as a whole. And I respect that process, and I want to know what this community would like to see over the next, you know, like you said, Confluence has been on the book since 2002. And it still guides us in decisions that we make in terms of zoning and all sorts of other things. And so it is very realistic to think that this plan will be guiding us for the next 20 years. And so it really should be something that our community weighs in on. And so that is my biggest concern, is just to make sure that we have as high of a level of engagement as we possibly can. Because like you said, it's comprehensive, it's in the name. I mean, we're talking about business and development and arts and entertainment and transportation and housing and accessibility and so many other things. It's so significant for this community. And so there is no one person should be guiding this process. This should be something that comes from the community, is of the community, and plans for the future of this community.
So when Confluence has been around for 20 years, is this a continuation of that, or is this like we're done with that, we're doing a new thing now? Is this like a completely new plan?
We are officially throwing it out the window. No, no. Tim actually has the actual real answer on that.
I would say we're going to incorporate, and we're using it as a basis to to further discussion as we move into this update of the comp plan. So no, we won't be throwing it out. I think what we've done has sort of evaluated. We've evaluated the things that we've achieved. We are looking at the things that haven't yet been accomplished, and bringing forward to the community, like, is this still an issue? Do we still need to address this? Here's the things we didn't take care of, and fitting those into sort of our issue identification exercises we do with the city. And so no, it won't be thrown out. It'll be used as a document to begin discussion as we move forward with an update.
The level of interaction that you were talking about when you were talking about just the ways that people can participate, almost like they're different kinds of games. I mean, this is not like, you know, click here for this answer, click here for this answer, click here, 20 minutes of taking a survey and you're out the door. Do you anticipate that having a more modern approach to that sort of digital interaction is going to help you to reach the audiences that you're trying to get input from more than just your standard, like, ask a question, pick the 1 to 5 survey range?
Yes, that is our goal. And we've already seen a very high level of participation, and that's been more so than some of our past planning efforts with just the metrics and the amount of users that have participated in the website. And then we anticipate even reaching out to more people when we start engaging in person or directly with individuals rather than just having to go to the website. So like I stated, we are trying to find multiple ways for people to interact. There may be individuals who aren't comfortable going to meetings or whether it's Zoom or in person, and they're more comfortable with being on their phone and interacting that way and providing feedback. And so that's their opportunity, their outlet to do that in the 5 to 10 minutes they can do it at home, versus those that like to talk and like to interact with people and look at a big paper map on a table and mark out things like that. And so we're offering that opportunity. So we're just hoping that the variety and broad range of ways for people to interact, as well as the multiple ways to interact within those ways, if that makes sense, will have more people participate in this process. I think the real challenge for me is like keeping them engaged throughout the year and a half process. So we just have to keep continually them engaged, continually throwing data at them and continually getting them involved and keeping them interested in what's going on so that we can have a very usable document at the end of the process.
A year and a half is, it seems like a long time, but in a process like this, it really goes by pretty quickly. What should people be expecting next? As now we've been talking about Forward Lacrosse. They know it's out there. They know about the website, which I'll ask you about in just a minute. But what can they expect in terms of next steps?
The next steps for us is getting out into the public. And like I said, in a variety of different ways to hear from them. There's a beginning part of it. We'll be looking at issue identification or concerns, asset mapping, sort of like a SWOT analysis, like strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats for the whole city, right? And hearing about that from the neighborhood or from the community. And then moving forward with that, we'll be taking that information and start going into the different elements of a comp plan. And usually that involves parks and rec, natural resources, historic preservation, land use, intergovernmental cooperation, neighborhoods, housing, economic development. There's all these different areas of the plan that we will be asking questions on. And so people will have the opportunity to respond to the elements that they're interested in or not, right? And so there'll just be several opportunities being presented to the public to respond to all these different elements and the survey questions and everything. And that's what we're working on now is moving forward. And as I said, we're looking to get out in the community as often as possible. And it could be even just at events. It could be like Riverfest. Maybe we have a booth where we're like, hey, scan the little QR code and join our website and answer a survey. We're looking to have opportunities for contests where it's, hey, we're looking for pictures of what sums up lacrosse to you is like the biggest asset. And then like randomly pull names out of a hat for somebody who submitted a picture for us to use in the comp plan, and they can win a gift certificate somewhere or something along those lines. We're just trying to find ways to get people involved, be excited about it, understand how important this is, and participate in the process to begin.
So if people want to find more information, what's the website once again?
It's forwardlacrosse.org is our website. And there's a variety of things to do. There's a variety of languages you can, and Google Translate's associated with it. We have a very great website that was done by River Tribal Media here locally in La Crosse. And I've heard nothing but positive reviews about how user-friendly it really is. So
Tim Acklin is a planning administrator for the city of La Crosse. Tim, thanks a lot for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Mitch Reynolds is the mayor of La Crosse. Mr. Mayor, thank you for joining us again.
Truly a pleasure, Ezra. Thank you so much for having us.
Certainly. And remember, you can hear this conversation again or stream any of our previous episodes on demand. Just go to WPR.org/newsmakers. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. Or find Newsmakers in your favorite podcast app. Coming up this weekend is the 29th annual La Crosse River Cleanup. Find out what's going on there and how you can take part. We're back in just a minute. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studios. Have you ever been walking next to the river or paddling a canoe or a kayak in a local waterway and noticed some bottles, cans, other trash and stuff floating along? Well, litter in the river isn't just unsightly. It can be dangerous to wildlife. It can be damaging to the environment. Coming up on this weekend, a group of volunteers will be working to clean up La Crosse area waterways, and that's what we're finding out more about today on Newsmakers. Joining me today is Russ Wilson, who's the co-chair of the La Crosse River Cleanup Planning Committee. Russ, thanks a lot for being here on Newsmakers today.
You bet. Thank you.
Tell me about, you're going to be working to help clean up the river. Talk about why that is so important.
Well, it's really important, like you said, for wildlife, but also for us as human beings when we go out there. If you go out to a place that you're expecting to enjoy and relax, and there's a big blue barrel right in the middle of your view, instead of enjoying that nice view or the sunset, your eye goes to that old blue barrel that floated out from somebody's dock at some point.
So the big blue barrel, I'm thinking of like little soda cans and stuff like that, but you're right. I mean, there are these huge items. How in the world does some of that stuff even make it into the river?
We've taken out almost 3,000 barrels out of the river. A lot of them were used as flotation under docks and boathouses, those kinds of things. So as, you know, the dock gets old or sometimes the barrels leak, they float out from underneath those docks and wind up downriver in backwater areas.
Nobody likes the way it looks. It stresses us out. It makes us angry or whatever. But this stuff can actually, like, it can damage, depending on what the trash is, it can damage water quality. It can, get stuck in land where it never decomposes and cause all kinds of damage to the environment, can it?
Oh, absolutely. We've had our volunteers find several hazardous waste sites. Some places, for instance, one was where I believe it was probably from a towboat at one time or a large commercial boat. And they must have changed or got rid of all their old oil filters. I mean, we're talking about oil filters that are 2 feet long and 8 inches in diameter, and a pile of them that would fill a couple of 55-gallon barrels wrapped and buried in the sand along a sandbar on the Mississippi River.
So this isn't just somebody losing it. I mean, that's something that had to have been done extremely deliberately.
Oh, yeah. And we've found, you know, occasionally when a volunteer goes to a barrel that's in the river, and normally if there's water in them, you've got to either drill a hole in them or take the screw cap out of them to dump the water out before you can actually lift them into your boat or move them because of the weight. But we've had people open those up and they're full of hazardous waste.
Wow. Yeah. I want to turn the conversation towards sort of your personal interest in this. You mentioned being a conservation warden. Obviously, you have great care for the outdoors and for what goes on there. How did you personally become interested in river cleanup and become actually so passionate about it?
Well, as a conservation warden, part of my community wardening duties, I worked with the Bryce Prairie Conservation Club that had a small cleanup on Pool 7 out of Bryce Prairie. And seeing what they were doing on Pool 7, and then having the majority of my work was on Pool 8 in the La Crosse area, and seeing how much worse, how much more garbage there was exponentially in Pool 8 than Pool 7, I decided to start river cleanup back in 1993 and coordinated with the Bryce Prairie Conservation Association and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, DNR, to create river cleanup back in 1993.
That's 28, 29 years?
This will be our 29th year of river cleanup this year. Yeah. And I've been retired about 11 years, so.
So as you go out and you continue to be active in these river cleanup efforts, what kind of difference do you notice from one year to the next? Is it getting better? Is it getting worse?
In some ways, it's getting better. When we first started river cleanup, we would get 150 to 250 steel 55-gallon barrels in addition to, filling three or four 30-yard roll-offs with garbage. We would have people bring in old truck axles with dualies on both sides. You know, we had truck tires and stuff like that that still had the metal spokes in the rims, you know, that were coming out. So that stuff is gone. But now that you don't see the steel barrels anymore, people are still using the plastic barrels, and there's still huge pieces of styrofoam flotation that come out from under people's docks, you know, and a lot of people just kick their docks loose too. And in the past, there was lots and lots of people that had these big ice shanties out there, the big wooden structures with the wood stoves in them and stuff. And a lot of times people would, you know, let those fall through the ice or try to burn them, and the whole floor was still there. Now people have portable ice at shanties. So we don't really see those kind of structures anymore, but we do see the portable ice shanties. And there's a lot of homeless folks out there that start camps and, you know, have lots of stuff out there that they bring out, and then they leave those areas and everything is left behind.
If people are listening to this and this is kind of resonating with them and they're interested in your project, what kind of person are you looking for in terms of your volunteers?
Hey, we're looking for somebody that's willing to get out there and go to work. This is a family-friendly event. So we have moms and dads and kids, grandmas, grandpas, people with boats, people without boats. Get out there. If you have a boat, that's wonderful. We like to see people get out there, clean up the sandbars where people maybe threw their trash in the fire, broke bottles and glass, or threw their beer cans, you know, into the brush behind their campsite. But we also need people that on the shoreline. There's lots of trails, the bike trails all along the La Crosse River, the Black River, up and down the different creeks that come into La Crosse. We've got a lot of area, and we've got really, really good coordinators at Leech Landing that can help people that show up.
Is this something that people need to sign up for, or can they just show up? And if they can just show up, where should they show up?
Well, we appreciate if people go to rivercleanuplacrosse.com and sign up. We're going to try to have T-shirts for everybody that shows up, and we have a great luncheon after the event. But you can just show up. But when you show up, we're going to need you to sign up then and complete our waiver before we let you go out.
What is a typical typical workday or a typical effort involved for somebody who's volunteering for this project?
Well, we like to have people come with, long sleeve shirt, long pants, appropriate footwear. I mean, if they have knee boots or hip boots, or, you know, something, because they're going to be working in and around the water where it's muddy. And, you know, a pair of gloves is a good idea. And we will provide garbage bags at the landings. And if we have enough, we may have some gloves available for people to use. But basically, we provide the dumpster for people to go out there and have the opportunity to do something really good that makes a difference in our environment and get it into our dumpsters. And then we take iron in and we recycle that. We separate that. We take the barrels in separate. We recycle those. We take the tires in especially. And if people find batteries like a boat battery or a car battery, we make sure that those get taken into the right places also.
Now, in something like this, you know, whenever we talk about a problem on the show, we like to talk about solutions, but also we like to talk about preventive measures that people can take. Here, it seems the prevention is obvious. Just don't litter, don't throw stuff into the river. And yet, like, there are obviously some people who are not getting the message. Do we know who it is that isn't getting the message, or why, or what we can do to make sure that that message is communicated more effectively?
Well, I think a lot of times it may come down to people that are partying and using alcohol out on the river, which isn't necessarily a good idea, especially if you're the one driving the boat. But, you know, we find the beer bottles and the beer cans, or, you know, that's in the campfire. When you get done drinking your whatever it is, whether it's a can or a bottle, take it back with you. You know, put it in some kind of a bag or receptacle, and don't let it sit on the back of your boat so it just flies out. And if you own a dock or a raft or something else, maintain it. If you have a bunch of barrels that you replaced, don't just let them sit on the dock and have the wind come at 50 miles an hour 2 days later and blow them all into the river. Make sure that you get rid of your old stuff. And people even around town, if it's going to be a really windy day, secure your garbage can. You've probably all seen it on windy days where people take their garbage out or have it set out someplace, and you get these really windy days and the whole big thing blows over and it blows down the street. Where does that all wind up? It goes down a storm sewer and down into the river, or it winds up going down into a ditch, and the next time it rains, it's running down into the river. That's where this stuff winds up.
I suppose there's no real way to tell, but that brings up the question of how much of the stuff that you find in the river is there because somebody actually tossed it in the river versus how much of it might have come through one of those storm drains or blown through the park into the river or out of somebody's yard or something.
You know, it's really hard to say, but, you know, we find places that are in remote areas and things like that where people can drive down and get next to the river. And we'll find that, you know, somebody dumps off 10 tires and rolls them down into the river off the bank because they don't want to spend the $2 or $5 per tire that it takes to get rid of it. Somebody is moving out of an apartment and they have an old lounge chair, an old sofa, and they don't want to pay to get rid of it, or they won't, you know, for whatever reason, they take it down and dump it off the bank. Old refrigerators, air conditioning units, people that have old boats that don't want them anymore, just cut them loose and let them float down the river.
One more time, before we let you go, I want to give you one more time to give people the details about this. The La Crosse River cleanup is coming up Saturday, tomorrow, as this airs. And it is in, obviously, the La Crosse area. And where can people go to find out more information or to sign up?
RiverCleanupLacrosse.com, and just sign up there. And we have four different sites that people come to. One is the Fred Funk Landing up on Bryce Prairie, the Clinton Street Boat Landing on the west side across from Copeland Park, the 7th Street Boat Landing behind Gunderson Lutheran Hospital, and the Goose Island West Boat Landing next to the entrance to the campground on Goose Island. That's where people can show up on Saturday from 8 a.m. till noon. And then from noon to 2, we have a luncheon at the Copeland Park Shelter right across the Black River from the Clinton Street West boat landing.
Russ Wilson is co-chair of the La Crosse River Cleanup Planning Committee. Thank you very much for talking to us about river cleanup.
You bet. Thank you, Ezra.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's how you can listen to our program every week. We're on Friday morning at 10 on the Ideas Network, 90.3. Friday night at 7 on NPR News and Music, 88.9. And of course, we're always online at WPR.org/newsmakers. For our producer, Dawn Jewell, I'm Ezra Wall. Join us again next time for another Newsmakers, right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.